Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today being the appearance day of Srila Advaitacharya, I'll read some one verse and discussion from the Bhagavatam, and then read a little bit about the transcendental position of Advaitacharya and one or two pastimes. So begin with the Bhagavatam. Like yesterday, it's one of these very long verses. It's actually two verses, 4 and 5 put together. I don't know. There's no real meter to this, so we'll just do the best we can. Okay? Maybe we'll just do word for word. You can all repeat as best. Ritvija uchu arhasi muhur arhatamarhanam asmakam anupatanam namo nama iti etavat sad upashikshitam ko arhati puman prakriti guna vyatikara martir anisha ishvarasya parasha prakriti purushayor arvaktanadbir nama rupa kritibi rupa nirupanam sakala jana nikaya prajina nirasana Shivatama Parvara Guna Gunaika Desha Ketanad Rite. Maharaj, do you have any suggestions how to do this? Maybe I'll just read the whole thing once and then if someone, Maharaj or others, want to say. So you can just listen. Arhasi muhur arhatamaharam asmakam anupatanam namo nama itye tavat sad upaishishiktam korarte puman prakriti guna vyatikara matir anisha ishvarasya parasya prakriti purushayor arvakkannablir nama Lupa kriti bi lupa nirupanam sakara jana nikaya vrijina nirasana shivmattama parvara guna gunaika desha katanad rite. So, thank you. Word meanings? Ritvija ucho. The priest said, Arhasi, please accept. Muhu, again and again. Arhatama, O most exalted, worshipable person. Arhanam, offering of worship. Asmakam, of us. Anupatthanam, who are your servants. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Iti, thus. Etavat, so far. Sat, by exalted personalities. Upashikshitam, instructed. Ka, what? Arhati, is able to make. Puman, man. Prakriti, of material nature. Guna, of the modes. Vyatikara, in the transformations. Mati, whose mind is absorbed. Anisha, who is most incapable. Ishvarasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Parasya, beyond. Prakriti Purushayo, the jurisdiction of the three modes of material nature. Arvatannabhi, which do not reach up to, or which are of, this material world. Namarupa akritibhi, by names, forms, and qualities. Rupa, of your nature or position. Nirupanam, ascertainment, perception. Sakala, all. Jananikaya, of mankind. Vrijina, sinful actions. Nirasana, which wipe out. Shiva Tama, most auspicious. Pravara, excellent. Gunagana, of the transcendental qualities. Ekadesha, one part. Katanat, by speaking. Rite, except. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The priests began to offer prayers to the Lord, saying, O most worshipable one, we are simply your servants. Although you are full in yourself, please, out of your causeless mercy, accept a little service from us, your eternal servants. We are not actually aware of your transcendental form, but we can simply offer our respectful obeisances again and again, as instructed by the Vedic literatures and authorized acharyas. Materialistic living entities are very much attracted to the modes of material nature, and therefore they are never perfect. But you are above the jurisdiction of all material conceptions. Your name, form, and qualities are all transcendental and beyond the conception of experimental knowledge. Indeed, who can conceive of you? In the material world, we can perceive only material names and qualities. We have no other power than to offer our respectful obeisances and prayers unto you, the transcendental person. The chanting of your auspicious transcendental qualities will wipe out the sins of all mankind. That is the most auspicious activity for us, and we can thus partially understand your supernatural position. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do with material perception. Even the impersonalist Shankaracharya says, Narayana paro vyaktat. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond the material conception. We cannot concoct the form and attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We must simply accept the description given in the Vedic literatures about the Lord's form and activities. As stated in Brahma Samhita 5.29, Chintamani prakara sadmasukappa vriksha laksha vritesu surabhir apalayayantam lakshmi sahasa satasam namasevyamanam govindamari prusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. We can have some conception of the Absolute Truth, His form and His attributes, simply by reading the descriptions given in Vedic literatures and authoritative statements given by exalted personalities like Brahma, Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, and others. Srila Rupa Goswami says, Atashi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Graham Indriyai. We cannot conceive the name, form, and qualities of Sri Krishna through our material senses. Because of this, other names for the Lord are Adhokshaja and Apakrita, which indicate that He is beyond any material senses. Out of His causeless mercy upon His devotees, the Lord appeared before Maharaj Nabhi. Similarly, when we are engaged in the Lord's devotional service, the Lord reveals Himself to us. Sevan Mukhe Hi Jivado Svayam Eva Sparantyadaha. This is the only way to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam Abhijananti Yavan Yas Chasmi Tattvataha. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service. There is no other way. We have to hear from the authorities and from the Shastras and consider the Supreme Lord in terms of their statements. We cannot imagine or concoct forms and attributes of the Lord. Om Ganatam Yandasha Janan Anjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umanitamina Tasmaya Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svampadantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here Maharaj Nabhi and his wife is described, they wanted sons, so they engaged many priests in puja or sacrifices to please the Lord. And beginning in this chapter, the Lord has appeared, and He was His form was described very beautifully in yesterday's verse. And here today, in text 4 and 5, the priests who have invoked the mercy of the Lord, they're offering their particular prayers to Him. And in the second verse, it's interesting, in the translation it describes in detail the different ways of pleasing the Lord, and then it specifically states, Maharaj Nabhi, who was a devotee, worshipped and offered prayers to the Lord with great faith and devotion, with a pure, uncontaminated mind. And here's the significant point. Superficially performing some yajna in the line of pravargya, the kind, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to His affection for His devotees, appeared before King Nabhi in His unconquerable and captivating form. So specifically, it's mentioned He'd engaged these priests, and they were performing these different ceremonies, rituals, yajnas. But specifically, because of His, He appeared to be superficially offering a yajna, but actually He was a great devotee, and is by His devotion, the Lord kindly chose to appear before Him. So here also in the purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing this point that the Lord is pleased by his devotees and by the devotion of his devotees. And this is really the essence of our Krishna consciousness movement. There are so many different philosophies. There are so many different Vedic types of practices, and just like this morning, hearing so many bells in the neighborhood and thinking some puja is going on here and some puja is going on there. Some people are getting up in the morning and they're walking by and are offering some respects to a holy place. Some people are reciting some shastras. Some people are doing some worship to the devas. Some people are offering respects to their forefathers. In different parts of the world, people are going to mosques, and they're going to gurdwaras, they're going to temples, they're going to so many different places. And at least according to our Vaishnava philosophy, and according to the Bhagavatam as being emphasized here, ultimately Krishna is the inconceivable Supreme Lord, and he's not only inconceivable, he's not even approachable. He's not only approachable, he's not even conceivable. We can't even understand him except in the ways that he reveals himself. And he particularly chooses to do so, or he does choose to do so, reciprocating with our devotion. So we may think we have so many different kind of qualifications and qualities. Some of us may be artistic, some of us may be more scholarly, some of us may have some management propensity, some of us may be good counselors, some of us may be good salespeople, some of us may be good preachers, some of us may be good at raising money, so many things. But ultimately Krishna says those things don't really matter. None of those things really matter. I mean, he's the Supreme Lord. We can maybe collect $1 million or a few million dollars or a few million rupees. What is it to him? You know, or we may have some beauty. What is our beauty to him? Or we may have some strength. You know, we read the Lord's pastimes in Krishna book and elsewhere. I mean, he fights big demons with the power of 100,000 elephants, and he just whirls them around, and they're like playthings. So what can our strength do to impress him? And we may have some little bit of artistic ability or some little bit of speaking ability or whatever. But just with the, in a flash, he describes in the Gita, he describes so many opulences to Arjuna. And then he says, but what you said, these are just a spark of my splendor. And we can't even see what Arjuna saw. We can't even see, you know, when the sun comes up, we can't even see how many stars are out there. So we're so small. But somehow Krishna, in his infinite kindness and his inherent absolute nature, he actually enjoys having a relationship with each and every one of us, his tiny, tiny, tiny parts and parcels. And he doesn't need our artistic talent or our intelligence or our beauty or our strength or our money. What he's interested in is our devotion. So that's also being explained here. And the priests in their particular prayers, they're also emphasizing this mood. Because they're performing this yajna and then the Lord appears, but they're understanding it's not that we did the yajna so he has to appear. You know, like you drive your car to the airport, you give them 30 rupees, they have to let you in. It's not like that. Okay, we did some puja, now please appear. There's so many stories like that. Narada Muni and others who did some worship, some meditation, and the Lord appeared. And then that beautiful story with Narada, his meditation broke. And he was overwhelmed in ecstasy at this vision of the Lord. And then he thought, okay, come again. And he sat and did his meditation, but he didn't come. He didn't appear. He didn't have to appear. He chooses to appear. So Prabhupada describes, just like if you want to meet a big, big man, you can't force your way in to see the big man. If you work in some factory, you want to see the owner. You don't just like go up to the secretary of the secretary of the secretary and say, excuse me, my name is Das. I work the night shift. I'd like to meet the owner. He says, go away. They won't let you. But Prabhupada said, if you act in such a way to attract the attention of the owner, In other words, if your devotion, in our terminology, if your devotion is so great, that actually will attract the attention. So the same way here, they were performing some yajna. Vishnu didn't appear because of the yajna. He appeared because of the devotion. Described superficially, the king was performing some yajna. That was the prescribed way to do it, but what really mattered was his devotion. So the priest here, they're offering this, a very nice prayer, very beautiful prayers they're offering. And just to highlight some of the points in their realizations and their insights and what they're sharing with us, their first point is they're acknowledging their own position. They begin by saying, "Oh, worshipful one, we are simply your servants." So they're starting out the very beginning of their prayers by acknowledging their position. They're not jumping up and saying, "Oh, look what we did. I knew how to chant these mantras, right? Just see, Vishnu came. Look, everybody, we got Vishnu to come to our ceremony. You didn't get him to come to your ceremony." Like in big cities like Mumbai and Washington, D.C., where I live, it's a big thing. Who comes to your parties, right? If you throw a big, big party and everybody looks around to see who came. Well, the Secretary of State came to your party. You're big. The President came. Oh, you're off the chart. The President came to your house. That's like immeasurable. You must have a lot of money to donate to the political process. So they didn't react like that. They didn't have any sense of pride in their accomplishments or their ability. But when the Lord appeared, they immediately said, "Okay, we're here, we're the priests, we're in a sense, we're the big guys here. The king brought us in. The king brought us to do this ceremony. He didn't bring other people. He himself didn't know how to do this ceremony. He brought us." So they could have been very proud. We can just imagine all the honor and the reverence that's given to these priests to come and do this big puja. But they didn't become proud at all. They had the opposite understanding. And the first words they offer are, "We're your servants." So they are taking a very humble position. And as the Bhagavad Gita describes, humility is the first quality of knowledge. If one's in knowledge, they have to be humble. Just like sometimes we see people are proud, we can understand they're not so knowledgeable then. Because if we're really knowledgeable, then, as the priests are describing, begin to understand how small we are. And out of that knowledge then naturally comes humility. So this is the first part of their prayer. They're acknowledging their position and they're taking a very humble position. And as the Gita describes the opposite mentality, it explains in the 16th chapter, the demoniac nature, one of the primary qualities of demoniac mentality is pride. So knowledge is humility, pride is demoniac. There's an expression in English that pride cometh, maybe it's biblical, I'm not sure. Pride cometh before the fall. As soon as if you're proud, then you're setting yourself up for some kind of a problem in the near future. And as we know, Lord Chaitanya, he emphasized, "Jai Shri Shri Rasa Radhasa Bihari Ki Jai." Lord Chaitanya also taught us like that if we are to practice devotional service and chant the Lord's name, first of all, it must be done with a humble heart. And that comes from this understanding, some knowledge of, if I understand what my position is, how can I not help but be humble? Just like sometimes, I know for myself, just to sit and give a Bhagavatam class in front of so many Vaishnavas and so many senior Vaishnavas, it's always a bit of a challenge. And before class, hopefully during class, I'm realizing that in any minute, if Krishna chooses, I can forget everything. Just like sometimes you go to recite a verse that you know for years, and it's not there. Or sometimes you see some friend you've known for years, and you go to say, "Oh," and it's not there. Or sometimes we go to speak, and your throat can dry up, or there can be some... Instantly, even in such a simple level as that, Krishna shows us how we're so dependent upon Him. We're not independent. We're very, very small. And if we understand that, then we will help us maintain a mood of humility. So the priests, they have that. Although they're very, very important people here, they're beginning with this, sharing this vision of their humble position. So the second thing that jumps out in their prayers is they ask the Lord to be engaged in their service. We are simply your servants. Please engage us in your service. Please accept a little service from you. What can we do? We can't do very much. As far as human society, they can do so much. They're priests, and by their ceremony, somehow the Lord was inspired to come. So they're very, very exalted, but they're thinking we're very small. So please allow us to do a little bit of service to you. And most people we know, when they pray, they oftentimes, if they pray, they ask for something else. They ask for some material benediction. Lord, please, I need some money. Or Lord, please, I'd like a good husband. Or can you please give me a good wife? Or can you please give me some power? Can you give me some promotion? Can you give me a better job? Can you make me healthy again? Can you make me beautiful? So the priests, because they have knowledge of their position, knowledge of the Lord, they're not asking like that. They're asking, please engage us in your service. They're understanding the difference between matter and spirit, and they're not allowing themselves to be distracted. We know there's that story, I think Prabhupada originally told this story, I've heard it many, many times, of the woman who was carrying a great load on her back, and she was struggling and struggling and struggling. And somehow she slipped and it fell off her back onto the ground. And she was crying, oh God, dear Lord, please help me, help me, help me. She was totally distraught. And she prayed with such earnestness, the Lord appeared before her. Said, yes, how may I help you? Just like the Lord's appeared here before the king. How may I help you? You prayed for me, I came. So she said, dear Lord, thank you for coming. Please, I've dropped this heavy load. Please, can you help me lift it back on my back? Is that all you want? Yes, thank you. You can go now, I'm okay. So that's our position. And that's really the position of materialistic mentality. We're thinking that the very things that we're attracted to, that entangle in this world, are good for us. And we go to see Krishna in whatever form around the world people may understand him, and they offer their prayers. Please give me more trouble. Give me more money so I can suffer more, ultimately. You know, make me more beautiful so more people will want to exploit me. Give me more power so more people will be envious and try to steal my position. Give me a bigger house so I'll be full of complete anxiety and won't be able to sleep at night worrying who will come and try to break in my house. Isn't it? Give me more materialistic knowledge so I can try to control the world and become more enamored and more bewildered and forget my position and not realize that time is running out. See, what kind of prayers are these? But this is our unfortunate position. We oftentimes we're desiring the very things that aren't good for us. So here the priests, they're setting an example. They're not saying, oh Lord, thanks for coming now. Please make us even more powerful. Please make us rich. Please make us more famous. Please give us more wives. Please give us more houses. Please give us more kings to engage us. And no, please engage us in your service. So they're acting like this. And they're asking like this. As Dhanavir Maharaj pointed out yesterday in his nice class, that just like Dhruva Maharaj, he was praying for materialistic things. But then when he actually had darshan of the Lord, he realized, you are a beautiful gem, and I've been seeking broken glass. How foolish I was. So we want to try to follow the footsteps of Dhruva and these priests and not be foolish and develop that desire ourselves. Please, Lord, please engage me in your service. And a final point, just in terms of their particular prayers. They're pointing out, and Prabhupada elaborates this extensively in his purport, that, Lord, we can't understand your position. We really can't understand the Lord's position. He is inconceivable. He is beyond. Just like we're seeing him here in these deity forms, and we may be sitting during artik or during class or during some darshan time offering some prayers. And sometimes we may be very intently offering our prayers, but there's hundreds of people in the room offering their prayers. And Krishna's hearing everyone's prayer, and he's reciprocating according to what he thinks is best for us. But then, just down the road, he's in another deity form. He's accepting so many prayers. And across the world, he's in so many hundreds and thousands of temples, and he's accepting so many prayers. And beyond that, he's in the heart of every living entity, and he's hearing their desires, and he's reciprocating with them. So, and beyond that, there's universes we can't even see, and he's present there. And beyond that, we have the form back here. From his navel, the whole thing is coming. And this is just a plenary part expansion. And he's there. So how can we understand? We can't understand, as the priests are saying. But, found in their footsteps, we can't understand you, but we simply can offer our respectful obeisances unto you. We simply can try to surrender to you according to the best of our ability. And please help us do so. So these are the moods of their prayers. We can't understand you, but we want to surrender to you. We are your servants. Please engage us in your service. So Prabhupada is elaborating in his purport that we should know we can't concoct the form of the Lord or how to worship him. He is inconceivable. He's unattainable. Unless he chooses to reveal himself, he's unattainable. There's nothing we can do to bring him. We can't force him. He's the independent Supreme Lord. But out of his mercy, out of his kindness, just because he is such a person, it's his nature. Oftentimes I think, just kind of a foolish, helpless position, how fortunate I am that he's so nice. You know? What if Krishna wasn't so nice? He'd still be God. We'd still be small. But just the nature of God is he contains all good qualities. All qualities come from him, of course. But he is the absolute source of all beauty and all knowledge and all fame and all power and all opulence. But still, by his nature, he wishes to have a relationship with us. So, Prabhupada is saying, like King Nabi, this is a beautiful point in his purport. He says, out of his causeless mercy upon his devotees, the Lord appeared before Maharaj Nabi. Similarly, when we are engaged in the Lord's devotional service, the Lord reveals himself to us. This is the only way to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we're engaged in their service, he reveals himself to us. The problem is we're not so much engaged in the service. We're serving for sure. We're always serving something. But speaking for myself and perhaps many of us here, my service is very diverse. Right? Like in one sense they say, diversity is a good thing. Right? Prabhupada told the GBC you should go to Mayapur every year, senior devotees, and you should discuss unity and diversity. So in some ways diversity is a very good thing. It's a very good thing. Within our temple communities, there's so many diverse ways of serving Krishna that enriches us in so many ways. So diversity is good, but in terms of our own intellectual and mental and personal focus, diversity in this way is not so good. Because oftentimes diversity means a little Krishna, a little lust. A little Krishna, a little anger. A little Krishna, a little pride. A little Krishna, a little this and that, so many things. But if that's our meditation, that's the reciprocation we get. Krishna says in 4th chapter Gita, all of them as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path and our respects. So when we're focused on Krishna, he'll reveal himself to us. Just like it's a natural thing. Just like in any kind of a school, the teacher is trying to give so much instruction to so many students. But the student that's completely focused, sits right up in the front, listens to every word, writes down everything, asks so many questions. They're completely... Who gets more mercy from the teacher? You know, the student that can't wait to run out of the room 5 minutes before the bell rings, comes late every day, 10 minutes late, forgets their books, didn't do their homework, falls asleep in the back of the class. When they wake up, they're just making fun in the back of the room, distracting the other students. The teacher is still trying to help them. But what can be done? They're really not so interested. So Krishna's like that teacher, like that friend. He said, okay, when you're interested, I'm here. I'm ready to give you. He's standing on the altar. Again, some of us walk in, please Krishna, can you take away my back pain? Someone's saying, please, my toothache, fix my toothache. Someone else is thinking, please give me some money. Okay. Describe. He can give those things so easily. But some of us, or all of us in one little part, corner of our heart, please, Krishna, give me devotional service to you. And that's what he really wants us to ask for, because that's what's going to make us happy, and that's what pleases him. And that's the nature of rasa. That's the spiritual realm, is reciprocating in love and service. So the problem again is we're not one-pointed. And there's a beautiful story. I get the rough story. Arjuna, when he was with Dronacharya, and Drona was testing or teaching his different students, and he put some target up. He wanted, there was, I can't remember, it was a bird. That was also the Swayamvara, similar story. But there was a bird, and he was asking them, okay, what do you see? I want you to shoot the eye of the bird off in the distance. What do you see? And he was asking Duryodhana and some of the other cousins, what do you see? Okay, look at the target. What do you see? Well, I see the sun. I see you. I see my cousins. I see the trees. Okay, go away. And different ones. And then, Arjuna, what do you see? I want you to shoot that target. I see the eye of the bird. Do you see anything else? No, I see the eye of the bird. That was his focus. And of course, because he was so focused, he became the greatest archer. And he was able to do such wonderful seva for Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra. So in the previous chapter, I think it was the father of Nabi, he didn't have such a good ending. If you may remember, King Agnidra. Remember King Agnidra a few verses before? I didn't read the whole story and I don't remember the section, but he was very attached to his wife. I think she was some kind of apsara. And at the time of his death, in accordance with the Vedic injunctions, the king after his death was promoted to the same planet as his celestial wife. That planet which is called Pitriloka, where the Pitris, the forefathers, live. So he was a little distracted, the forefathers. He was also a great exalted person. Very exalted person. He was what? The grandfather of Rishabdeva. This is the advent we're getting ready to read. He's about to appear. So he was in a great line. He was a great exalted personality, but his mind wasn't so focused. And because of that, he didn't get the supreme goal. So the priests, they're asking like that. They're praying like that. Please, let us be fixed in your service. We just want to offer our obeisances unto you. And Prabhupada is saying that Krishna, he'll reciprocate with us. He'll reveal himself the same way he's revealed himself in so many places and times as revealed in the history and the pages of the Bhagavatam. He'll reveal himself to us when our meditation, our devotion becomes similarly fixed. But it's not so fixed. And therefore, the acharyas, especially our founder acharya, Srila Prabhupada, he's given us this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He's given us a morning program. He's given us translated and purport so many shastras. He's given us different practices and different services to help us clean our hearts so we can become focused in our devotion, our meditation on the Lord, and in this way attain the mercy of the Lord, just as the king has attained the mercy of the Lord. So Prabhupada always reminds us we should be careful in our execution of Krishna consciousness. Do so in an attentive way. Be very careful to avoid offenses. Always remember, as the priests are praying, I'm your servant. I'm not higher than this one, lower than that one, two rungs below this one. This type of hierarchical conception of life is wrong. Actually, we should think I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Not that, you know, I came December 5th, 1999, and you came on December 7th, 1999. Therefore, I am eternally your senior Vaishnava. Bow down before me. This is nonsense. But if we actually have 2 days seniority, that means we should be 2 days more convinced that I'm his servant. Isn't it? That's the proof. If we have seniority, we should be more in the mood of a servant. Not so easy to do because of our conditioning, but that's the essence that Prabhupada's taught us. And the priests are saying, I'm your servant, I can't understand you, you're so great, but I can't offer my obeisances unto you. Just like we should think, we come in the temple, we offer obeisances, the deity curtains open, we offer obeisances, class ends, we offer obeisances. We shouldn't just kind of thoughtlessly recite the prayers. We should, of course, meditate on the mercy of our spiritual master whose glories we're reciting and those of our founder, Acharya. But we should also think, actually, I'm paying my obeisances because I'm understanding this pleases Krishna. I'm paying my obeisances because this purifies my heart. I'm paying my obeisances because Prabhupada said we should do it. I'm paying my obeisances. I'm showing you right now, Krishna, I want to surrender to you. It's not just some thoughtless act. I am consciously bowing down before you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please allow me to be engaged in your service. In this way, by Prabhupada's mercy, every minute of our day is filled with these types of activities and meditation. He's very kind to us. He's given us this process. So I will stop there. And I was told because there's no breakfast that we can go till 9 o'clock or so. So I'll read something from Advaita Acharya's pastimes. But any comments or questions before we do that on the Bhagavatam section here? Nishringananda Prabhu.
Earlier you were mentioning, but thank you very much for a very nice and lucid class and making the distinctions, especially regarding praying to Krishna for anything material. And in that context, when people sometimes they read the 10th, they read the Krishna book, and they see that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they were in anxiety, so they were praying to be relieved from the onslaught of a terrible storm. So how do you explain to a newcomer exactly what the mood of the inhabitants of Vrindavan were relative to the statement that devotees generally don't pray for anything material?
Thank you. It's a nice question. Let me maybe not even go to that degree of explaining the mood of the residents in Vrindavan. I don't know how good a job I can do with that, but I'm going to take your question to correct maybe something I didn't explain so nicely in the class. Thank you. Because sometimes I mentioned a couple of times, we shouldn't just pray for money, shouldn't just pray for power, health, these things. And at the same time, the fact is we're all conditioned souls. The idea is, as I understand, that and Prabhupada comments many places that devotees, we also sometimes have needs. You know, we also sometimes have family members with problems, or we maybe have some psychological problems or some physical problems or even financial problems. Those that, you know, grihasthas in particular are blessed with financial problems to help them become detached from this material world. So it's not inappropriate that we also approach Krishna with those needs, but that shouldn't be the essence of our meditation. I mean, I can, you know, share. I have a business that I kind of needed to start years ago to help support my service, and Krishna's shown me he's in control, because when he wants, it's profitable, and when he doesn't want, it's like barely surviving. And I was just thinking, I often get the mercy of landing here when I first come to India. And I can remember, you know, many times in the past I would offer prayers to the Lord, different types of prayers. One of the prayers I offer is, please, if you so desire, maybe you can make this business profitable again. And I was thinking, this is about the fourth year I've come and said, you know, maybe you can make it profitable again. So I'm starting to think maybe he has other plans. So it's okay to ask for those things. Because I'm trying to, you know, please, if it's your desire, please, I have grihastha, I have this business, and I'm trying to use the profits for you, please do so. Please allow it to be profitable, if you so desire. My dear Lord, I have this body, I'm trying to use it in your service. If you so desire, please make it healthy again. Or my dear Lord, I have this family, if you so desire, please take care of them in this way or that. So it's not that those things aren't part of the devotee's vision. Sometimes, I think in our immaturity, because we're trying to understand the difference between spirit and matter, but as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, in order to make advancement in spiritual life, it's like a train. There's two tracks. You have your material needs and you have your spiritual needs. And the both have to be adjusted. If you don't take both of them into account, what happens if the train's going along and all of a sudden there's one track? It falls off. It crashes. So there has to be some balance. The problem is material consciousness, people put all the emphasis on material needs and they give up the spiritual. So we have to have some balance in our lives. Even a brahmachari, you know, you have to have your three or four dhotis and your at least one bucket to take a shower, etc. You need, you know, some things. So Krishna also provides those things. So sometimes if those are lacking and there's some difficulty, we can also approach Krishna for those needs. We should, if it's in our heart. But not just those things. And in terms of the resonance of Vrindavan, you have to really look and see how Prabhupada explains that in their purport. But that shows, first and foremost, as I understand it, they're just completely dependent upon Krishna. They have no shelter outside of Krishna. They have no needs outside of Krishna. And as the great acharyas teach us to pray, my dear Lord, if you so desire... You know, Prabhupada taught us that when he was sick and when he was traveling around the world preaching, there was at least two, maybe more times he was very, very ill. And he taught his disciples in the same way to pray, my dear Lord, our spiritual master's mission is not finished. If you so desire, please you give him more time. Ultimately, you're in control. What can I do? But we'd like him to stay, or I'd like, in terms of ourselves, I'd like to have a healthy body to serve you. I'd like to have a peaceful mind to serve you. I'd like to have a little more, as Grihastha, maybe financial stability to serve you, if you like. But if you don't like, if you think it's better for me to be poverty stricken my whole life, okay, I'll accept that. If this disease is, I'll do what I can because it's your body ultimately to use in your service. I'll try to keep it healthy. But if ultimately it's not meant to be healthy, okay, you're in control. I'll accept that. In the midst of my difficulties, I'll still pray to you. I'll pray even more intently to you. So in that way. So thank you. That's an important reminder, that balance. So let me read a little bit about Advaitacharya. It's his transcendental appearance day. And we're fasting, so there's a little extra time. So I have just a couple sections. First is from the Adi Leela, chapter is entitled The Glories of Advaitacharya. Just chant a little invocation. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. So this is Adi Leela, chapter 6, beginning a little bit, text 5, The Glories of Advaitacharya. Lord Advaitacharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita. And because he propagates the cults of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. Sri Advaitacharya is indeed directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. His glory is beyond the conception of ordinary living beings. Just like we read, it's beyond our conception. Mahavishnu performs all the functions for the creation of the universes. Sri Advaitacharya is His direct incarnation. That Purusha creates and maintains with His external energy. He creates innumerable universes in his pastimes. By his will, he manifests himself in unlimited forms in which he enters each and every universe. Sri Advaita Acharya is a plenary part of that Purusha and so is not different from him. Indeed, Sri Advaita Acharya is not separate but is another form of that Purusha. He, Advaitacharya, helps in the pastimes of the Purusha with whose material energy and by whose will he creates innumerable universes. Being a reservoir of all auspicious attributes, Sri Advaitacharya is all auspicious for the world. His characteristics, activities, and name are always auspicious. I'll read a little bit of a purport here from Srila Prabhupada. Sri Advaita Prabhu, who is an incarnation of Mahavishnu, is an acharya or teacher. All his activities and all the other activities of Vishnu are auspicious. Anyone who can view the all auspiciousness in the pastimes of Lord Vishnu also becomes auspicious simultaneously. Therefore, since Lord Vishnu is the fountainhead of all auspiciousness, anyone who is attracted by the devotional service of Lord Vishnu can render the greatest service to human society. Continuing, Mahavishnu creates the entire material world with millions of his parts, energies, and incarnations. Skipping a little bit ahead here. It's a long purport. Lord Vishnu, in his efficient aspect, glances over the material energy, and Sri Advaita, as the material cause, creates the material world. In the form of Advaita, he infuses the material ingredients with creative energy. Therefore, Advaita is the original cause of creation. Sri Advaitacharya is the creator of millions and millions of universes, and by his expansions as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, he maintains each and every universe. Sri Advaita is the principal limb, Anga, of Narayan. Srimad Bhagavatam speaks of limb as a plenary portion, Amsa, of the Lord. Sri Advaita, who is a reservoir of virtues, is the main limb of Aho Vishnu. His full name is Advaita, for he is identical in all respects with the Lord. As he had formerly created all the universes, now he descended to introduce the path of bhakti. He delivered all living beings by offering the gift of Krishna bhakti. He explained the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in light of devotional service. Purport. Although Sri Advaita Prabhu is an incarnation of Vishnu, for the welfare of the conditioned souls, he manifested himself as a servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And throughout all his activities, he showed himself to be an eternal servitor. Continuing. Since he has no other occupation than to teach devotional service, his name is Advaita Acharya. He is the spiritual master of all devotees and is the most revered personality in the world. By a combination of these two names, his name is Advaita Acharya. Sri Advaita Acharya is the principal limb of the Supreme Lord. His truths, names, and attributes are all wonderful. He worshipped Krishna with tulsi leaves and water of the Ganges and called for him in a loud voice. Thus, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on earth accompanied by his personal associates. It is through him, Advaitacharya, that Lord Chaitanya spread the Sankirtan movement and through him that he delivered the world. The glory and attributes of Advaitacharya are unlimited. How can the insignificant living entities fathom them? Jai Sri Advaitacharya Ki Jai. So, I don't know what time you usually go on these fast days. It's 9 o'clock. Should we stop now or read another pastime? Or what time do they usually go? I didn't get clear instructions. I could read the pastime of Advaitacharya with Lord Nityananda, which is the last one we had pulled out. Should we do that? Okay, because there's no breakfast. Okay. So this is from the Majjalila, Volume 1, Chapter 3, Lord Chaitanya at the House of Advaita Acharya. Very nice story. After accepting the sannyas order, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to go to Vrindavan and engage himself wholly and solely in the service of Mukunda in a solitary place. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was en route to Vrindavan, all the ecstatic symptoms became manifest, and he did not know in which direction he was going, nor did he know whether it was day or night. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went towards Vrindavan, Nityananda Prabhu, Chandrasekhar, and Prabhu Mukunda followed him. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed through Radhadesh, whoever saw him in ecstasy exclaimed, "Hari, Hari!" As they chanted this with the Lord, all the unhappiness of material existence diminished. All the cowherd boys who saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passing joined with him and began shouting loudly, "Hari, Hari!" When he heard all the cowherd boys also chanting, "Hari, Hari!" Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased. He approached them, put his hand on their heads and said, "Go on chanting like that." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thus blessed them all, saying that they were all fortunate. In this way he praised them, and he felt very successful because they chanted the holy name of Hari. Calling all the boys in confidence and telling them a reasonable story, Nityananda Prabhu instructed them as follows. If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks you about the path to Vrindavan, please show him the path on the bank of the Ganges instead. When the cowherd boys were questioned by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the path to Vrindavan, the boys showed him the path on the bank of the Ganges, and the Lord went that way in ecstasy. So they sent him the wrong way. This is probably the origin of Indian directions, huh? Those of us from the West, we've noticed that it seems part of Indian culture. If someone asks directions, it's very rude to not try to help, isn't it? So even if you don't know, you guess. So we all have the experience. In the West, you ask someone, "Where is such and such place?" They'll say, "I don't know." So you ask three or four people till they know. But in India, because more polite, you ask, "Where do I go?" And even they have no idea, they'll go, "Oh, that way." So this must be the original spiritual source of that cultural quality here. The cowherd boys sent Lord Chaitanya the wrong way. He said, "Yeah, this is Vrindavan. You go that way. No problem." As the Lord proceeded along the bank of the Ganges, Sri Nityananda Prabhu asked Acharya Ratna, Chandrasekhar Acharya, to go immediately to the house of Advaitacharya. Nityananda Goswami told him, "I shall take Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the bank of the Ganges at Shantipur, and Advaitacharya should carefully stay there on shore with a boat. After that," Nityananda Prabhu continued, "I shall go to Advaitacharya's house, and you should go to Navadvipa and return with Mother Sachi and all the other devotees." After sending Acharya Ratna to the house of Advaitacharya, Sri Nityananda Prabhu went before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and gave notice of his coming. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in ecstasy, and he asked where Nityananda Prabhu was going. Nityananda replied that he was going with him toward Vrindavan. When the Lord asked Nityananda Prabhu how far it was to Vrindavan, Nityananda replied, "Just see, here is the river Jamuna." Because it said Lord Chaitanya didn't know night or day, so. Saying this, Nityananda Prabhu took Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu near the Ganges, and the Lord, in his ecstasy, accepted the river Ganges as the river Jamuna. The Lord said, "Oh, what great fortune! Now I have seen the river Jamuna." Thus, thinking the Ganges to be the river Jamuna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to offer prayers to it. After reciting this mantra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered obeisances and took his bath in the Ganges. At that time, he had only one piece of underwear, for there was no second garment. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was standing there without a second garment, Sri Advaitacharya arrived in a boat, bringing with him new underwear and external garments. When Advaitacharya arrived, he stood before the Lord and offered his obeisances. After seeing him, the Lord began to wonder about the entire situation. Still in his ecstasy, the Lord asked Advaitacharya, "Why did you come here? How did you know that I was in Vrindavan?" Advaitacharya disclosed the whole situation, telling Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. Now it is my good fortune that you have come to the bank of the Ganges. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, Nityananda has cheated me. He has brought me to the bank of the Ganges and told me that it was the Jamuna. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accused Nityananda of cheating him, Sri Advaitacharya said, whatever Nityananda Prabhu has told you is not false. You have indeed just now taken your bath in the river Jamuna. Advaita Acharya then explained that at that spot, the Ganges and Jamuna flow together. On the western side was the Jamuna, and on the eastern side was the Ganges. Advaita Acharya then suggested that since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken his bath in the river Jamuna, and his underwear were now wet, the Lord should change his cloth for dry garments. Advaitacharya said, you have been fasting continuously for 3 days in your ecstasy of love for Krishna. I therefore invite you to my home, where you may kindly take your alms. Come with me to my residence. Advaita Prabhu continued, at my home I have just cooked one palmful of rice. The vegetables are always very simple. There is no luxurious cooking, only a little liquid vegetable and spinach. Because he knew Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now he's accepted sannyas and he's wanting to establish a very simple profile. Saying this, Sri Advaitacharya took the Lord into the boat and brought him to his residence. There, Advaitacharya washed the feet of the Lord and was consequently very happy within. All the eatables were first cooked by the wife of Advaitacharya. Then Srila Advaitacharya personally offered everything to Lord Vishnu. All the prepared food was divided into three equal parts. One part was arranged on a metal plate for offering to Lord Krishna. Of the three divisions, one was arranged on a metal plate and the other two arranged on plantain leaves. These leaves were not bifurcated and they were taken from a banana tree that held at least 32 bunches of banana, big leaves. The two plates were filled very nicely with the kinds of food described below. And there's a long description of all these wonderful foodstuffs. The cooked rice was stacked of very fine grains, nicely cooked, and in the middle was yellow clarified butter from the milk of cows. Surrounding the stack of rice were pots made of the skins of banana trees, and in these pots were varieties of vegetables and mung dal. Among the cooked vegetables were patolas, squashed, mana kachu, and a salad made with pieces of ginger and various types of spinach. There was sukta, bitter melon, mixed with all kinds of vegetables, defying the taste of nectar. There were five types of bitter and pungent suktas. Actually, this isn't a good pastime to read on a fast day. But I started, so we'll finish. Sorry. Among the various vegetables were newly grown leaves of nim trees fried with eggplant. The fruit known as patola was fried with pulambadi, a kind of dal preparation, first mashed and then dried in the sun. There was also a preparation known as Kushmanda Manichaki. Anybody know what that is? The preparation made with coconut pulp mixed with curd and rock candy was very sweet. There was a curry made of banana flowers and squash boiled in milk, all in great quantity. There were small cakes in sweet and sour sauce and five or six kinds of sour preparations. All the vegetables were so made that everyone present could take prasad. There were soft cakes made with mung dal, soft cakes made with rice bananas, and soft cakes made with urdal. There were various kinds of sweetmeats, condensed milk mixed with rice cakes, a coconut preparation, and every kind of cake desirable. All the vegetables were served in pots made of banana leaves taken from trees producing at least 32 bunches of bananas. These pots were very strong and big and did not tilt or totter. All around the three eating places were 100 pots filled with various kinds of vegetables. Along with the various vegetables was sweet rice mixed with ghee. This was kept in new earthen pots. Earthen pots filled with highly condensed milk were placed in three places. Besides the other preparations, there were chipped rice made with milk and mixed with bananas, and also with white squash boiled in milk. Indeed, it is not possible to describe all the preparations that were made. In two places there were earthen pots filled with another preparation made with yogurt, sandesh, and banana. I am unable to describe it all. Upon the stack of boiled rice and all the vegetables were flowers of tulsi trees. There were also pots filled with scented rose water. There were three sitting places where soft cloths were placed. Thus Lord Krishna was offered all the food, and the Lord took it very pleasantly. Advaita Prabhu asked the two brothers, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, to come to see the Artik. The two lords and all others present went to see the Artik ceremony. After the Artik was performed for the deities, Lord Krishna was made to lie down to rest. Advaitacharya then came out to submit something to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaita Prabhu said, My dear lords, kindly enter this room. The two brothers, Chaitanya and Nityananda, came forward to take the prasad. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu went to accept the prasadam, they both called Mukunda and Haridas to come with them. However, Mukunda and Haridas, both with folded hands, spoke as follows. When Mukunda was called for, he submitted, My dear sir, I have something to do that is not yet finished. Later I will accept the prasad. So you two, Prabhu, should now please enter the room. Haridas said, I am the most sinful and lowest among men. Later I will eat one palm full of prasad while waiting outside. Advaitacharya took Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within the room, and the two lords saw the arrangement of the prasad. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially was very pleased. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of all the methods employed in cooking and offering food to Krishna. Indeed, he was so pleased that he said, Frankly, I will personally take the lotus feet of anyone who can offer Krishna such nice food and place those lotus feet on my head birth after birth. So a benediction for all the cooks in ISKCON. Cooks, such nice feast for the Lord. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the room, he saw three divisions of food, and he knew that all of these were meant for Krishna. However, he did not understand the intentions of Advaitacharya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Let us sit down in these three places. We shall take prasad. However, Advaitacharya said, I shall distribute the prasad. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought that all these three servings were meant for distribution. Therefore, he asked for another two banana leaves, saying, Let us have a little quantity of vegetable and rice. Advaitacharya said, Just sit down on these seats. Catching their hands, he had them both sit down. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, It is not proper for sannyasi to eat such a variety of foods. If he does, how can he control his senses? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not accept the food that had already been served, Advaitacharya said, Please, give up your concealment. I know what you are, and I know the confidential meaning of your accepting the sannyas order. Advaitacharya then requested Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to eat and give up such juggling words. The Lord replied, I certainly cannot eat so much food. Advaitacharya then requested the Lord to simply accept the prasad without pretense. If he could not eat it all, the balance could be left on his plate. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I will not be able to eat so much food, and it is not the duty of a sannyasi to leave remnants. In this connection, Advaitacharya referred to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eating at Jagannath Puri. Lord Jagannath and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Advaitacharya pointed out that at Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate 54 times a day, and each time he ate many hundreds of pots of food. Sri Advaitacharya said, The amount of food that three people can eat does not constitute even a morsel for you. In proportion to that, these eatables are not even five morsels of food for you. Advaita continued, By my great fortune, you have just come to my home. Please do not juggle words. Just begin eating and do not talk. Upon saying this, Advaitacharya supplied water to the two lords so that they could wash their hands. The two lords then sat down and, smiling, began to eat the prasad. Now, Lord Nityananda, he's a different mood. So his mood is described now. Lord Nityananda said, I have undergone fasting for 3 days continuously. Today I had hoped to break my fast. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was thinking that the quantity of food was enormous, Nityananda Prabhu, on the contrary, thought it not even a morsel. He had been fasting for 3 days and had greatly hoped to break the fast on that day. Indeed, he said, although I am invited to eat by Dvaitacharya, today also is a fast. So small a quantity of food will not even fill half my belly. Dvaitacharya replied, sir, you are a mendicant traveling on pilgrimage. Sometimes you eat fruits and roots, and sometimes you simply go on fasting. I am a poor brahmana, and you have come to my home. Please, be satisfied with whatever little food you have received, and give up your greedy mentality. Lord Nityananda replied, whatever I may be, you have invited me. Therefore, you must supply as much as I want to eat. His Divine Grace, Advaitacharya, after hearing this statement of Nityananda Prabhu, took the opportunity presented by the joking words and spoke to him as follows. Advaitacharya said, you are a reject Paramahamsa, and you have accepted the renounced order of life just to fill up your belly. I can understand that your business is to give trouble to the brahmanas. Advaitacharya accused Nityananda Prabhu, saying, you can eat 10 to 20 manas of rice. I am a poor brahmana. How shall I get so much rice? Whatever you have, though it be a palmful of rice, please eat it and then give up. Do not show your madness and strew the remnants of food here and there. In this way, Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate and talked with Advaitacharya jokingly. After eating half of each vegetable preparation given to him, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu abandoned it and went on to the next. As soon as half the vegetable in the pot was finished, Advaitacharya filled it up again. In this way, as the Lord finished half a preparation, Advaitacharya again and again filled it up. After filling the pot with vegetables, Advaitacharya requested them to eat more. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, how much more can I go on eating? Advaitacharya said, please do not give up whatever I have already given you. Now, whatever I am given, you may eat half and leave half. In this way, by submitting various humble requests, Advaitacharya made Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda eat. Thus, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fulfilled all the desires of Advaitacharya. Again, Nityananda Prabhu jokingly said, my belly is not yet half filled up. Please take away your food. I have not taken the least of it. After saying this, Nityananda Prabhu took a handful of rice and threw it on the floor in front of him as if he were angry. When two or four grains of the thrown rice touched his body, Advaitacharya began to dance in various ways with the rice still stuck to his body. When the rice thrown by Nityananda Prabhu touched his body, Advaitacharya thought himself purified by the touch of the remnants thrown by Paramahamsa Nityananda. Therefore, he began dancing. Advaitacharya jokingly said, my dear Nityananda, I invited you, and indeed I have received the results. You have no fixed caste or dynasty. By nature, you are a madman. To make me a madman like yourself, you have thrown the remnants of your food at me. You did not even fear the fact that I am a brahmana. Nityananda Prabhu replied, these are the remnants of food left by Lord Krishna. If you take them to be ordinary remnants, you have committed an offense. Srila Nityananda Prabhu continued, if you invite at least 100 sannyasis to your home and feed them sumptuously, your offense will be nullified. Advaitacharya replied, I shall never again invite another sannyasi. For it is the sannyasi who has spoiled all my brahminical smriti regulations. After this, Advaitacharya made the lords wash their hands and mouths. He then took them to a nice bed and made them lie down to take rest. Sri Advaitacharya fed the two lords cloves and cardamoms mixed with tulsi flowers. Thus there was a good flavor within their mouths. Sri Advaitacharya then smeared the bodies of the lords with sandalwood pulp and then placed very fragrant flower garlands on their chest. When the lord lay down on the bed, Advaitacharya waited to massage his legs. But the Lord was hesitant and spoke as follows to Advaitacharya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Advaitacharya, You have made me dance in various ways. Now give up this practice. Go with Mukunda and Haridas and accept your lunch. Thereupon Advaitacharya took prasadam with Mukunda and Haridas, and they all wholeheartedly ate as much as they desired. Jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Advaitacharya Prabhu ki jai. Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.